Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Lenita Ellis, and I represent Santino Wolf on his appeal here today. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
4 minutes, yes, ma'am.
I'm asking the court here, attorney for Mr. Wolf, to reverse and dismiss or reverse and remand all of the charges. The main thing, I will not have in this period of time to argue, be able to go over every detail in the brief, so I would submit the brief. This is a case where I did not represent the defendant in the lower court, but I was appointed on this appeal. This is also a situation where I felt it necessary to go through all of the evidence, and there's a little more detail in the evidence here because of all of the inconsistencies. I know it's an uphill battle when you have, I'm arguing that it was an abuse of discretion of the trial court to allow the drug information in because of a lack of the chain, but I've also, a gap in the chain, but I also did not find any case with the same facts of this case.
I hope you don't.
Now, I do, there is a mistake on page 13 of my brief, and it's the only thing I agree with the Attorney General. Going over, you do not have to prove a nexus. The Court of Appeals said you did. The Supreme Court of Virginia says you do not have to prove a nexus.
Ms. Ellis, is it your argument that the break in the chain and the time period that we really need to focus on is while the drugs were in the custody of Officer Abrera? We're good. Once he delivers them to Investigator Heinsohn, from then on we're okay.
If he delivered it. If he delivered it, but my point is that at that point, the case was infected. It was tainted. The chain was tainted. And I wanted to point out in particular, I did not see a case that had the information that Ibarra stated, and it's on my brief, page 6, during his testimony about the guns in his joint appendix, page 268, Officer Ibarra expressed concern at his lack of notes and memory, and possibly, this is the key, and possibly confusing this with another of his cases. And then he quotes, "Gosh, I wish I had my note from my other case, because this is completely different than what it is with this gentleman. I don't have my notes from the other case, but this is really, that's something different from what Mr. Wolf is."
But he testified, or in the light most favorable to your argument, he said he believed he gave the drugs to Officer Corey.
He did, and he didn't mention it.
But the testimony from Heinsohn was clear and unequivocal that he got the drugs from Abrera.
That's what Officer Heinsohn says, but also Officer Heinsohn is also the one who was supposed to be the detective on the case.
But my question is, why couldn't the trial court conclude that Abrera was simply suffering from lapse of memory in saying that he gave the drugs to Coy? Coy denied receiving them, and Abrera said, "No, I got them from." Heinsohn said, "I got them from Abrera."
That might be there if we didn't have this on the record where he admits he could have it confused with another case. And I cannot think, I was a prosecutor from 81 to 92. I don't remember seeing anything like this, and I would submit.
Well, I was a prosecutor for 30 years, and I'll agree with you. This is certainly not the most pristine chain of custody I've ever come across.
You have no list. You have no sealed evidence. You don't have where they sign the evidence envelope. Heinsohn apparently after the fact decides to voucher all this, but did not require anyone who brought stuff to her to sign it and seal it. And I don't see evidence in this transcript where any of the officers stated that when turned over to the next person, it was the same evidence and in the same condition as when they received it.
Is the resolution of whether or not there was a proper chain of custody resolved by a question of law or a question of fact?
I think in this instance it was a question of law that the judge was responsible for making sure that jury.
So we go back to the premise then that there needs to be a determination of whether a vital link in the chain of custody has been compromised.
Yes, sir. And in this instance,
which then becomes, if I may, a factual determination, correct?
For the judge to decide, because it should never have gone to the jury if it was tainted. And I looked at the Pope case, and I looked at the hard road, I have it listed on page 10, and it says if there's a vital link in the possession and treatment and the evidence is left to conjecture, the chain of custody is incomplete and the evidence is inadmissible. And that cites Hargrove, and it cites Jeter. And I looked to see what the facts were of that case, and there's a Pope case where they let it come in. It was the officer who had collected the evidence some 30 years earlier in a murder and a rape was the only one collecting evidence and had turned it over to a detective. Since then, he had had a stroke. But they allowed past recollection recorded from his notes. Ibarra doesn't have that. We don't have that assurance in the case at bar.
In 1978, our Supreme Court in Smith v. Commonwealth adopted language from a Fifth Circuit case, and it is this: there is a presumption of regularity in the handling of exhibits by public officials. Now, we have here three public officials. Why can't we, given the fact that the testimony is at best ambiguous, it's certainly not conclusive in your favor, but if it's ambiguous as to who Officer Brera gave it to, why can't we rely, or why couldn't the trial court rely on a presumption of regularity?
I would submit, and I don't have the specific facts of that case, I don't know the specific facts of that one particular one that you're mentioning, but public officials, I would submit, should be more like lab people. And I know once it's submitted to the lab, there's a presumption of regularity.
And that did deal with lab officials. The language of the opinion and the language that it adopts from this U.S. v. Dowdery case is not limited to lab technicians.
I would urge the court that that should be limited to the public officials, although it does not mention that, and that the Hargrove and Jeter cases should be used in determining whether or not there has been a vital link of the chain. The Jeter case, the officer had locked and sealed the envelope, and there was no question that it had not been tampered with when the lab person looked at it.
Chain of custody. In this case, isn't it true that we don't have a break of a link, but rather a suggestion of a link that did not exist? In other words, Ibarra was under the view that he gave the drugs to Coy. Well, it turns out that apparently he did not give them to Coy, he gave them to Heinzen. So what Ibarra is suggesting is that there was a link there that really didn't exist. But the bottom line is that there is evidence in the record suggests that everything that should have happened with regard to the handling of the drugs has indeed happened. And that there, I'm looking at it from a reliability standpoint, the trial court made the determination that the handling of the drugs in the chain of custody was appropriate.
Except that I don't think that the court gave enough credence to Ibarra's own testimony that's listed on page 6 of my brief, where he had concerns of his own whether he might have confused this with another case, such that the evidence that was turned over to whoever it was turned over to might have been the evidence in another case. And I think that's the critical point. And he also testified it was a very...
But isn't that, to some degree, rehabilitated by Heinzen, who says, no, Ibarra gave it to me, and I turned him over to the proper person, and so that there's really no problem. So while Ibarra's memory may be compromised, I guess is the best word I can come up with, Heinzen, by his testimony, cleans it up by saying, no, Ibarra gave them to me, and those were clearly the drugs associated with this case.
But Heinzen cannot say that. Heinzen was not at the scene. Heinzen stayed in the Vice and Narcotics office. There's some confusion whether or not someone else had brought something and just put it on a table. So Heinzen cannot say that the evidence that was turned over to her by whoever was the same evidence that Ibarra actually took. Ibarra, in his own testimony, and it's joint appendix page 275 and 268, had concerns that he might have mixed this evidence up with another case, and I have a quote there. And he also said it was a pretty chaotic day. No one could even say who all had been in the car or how many officers were there or whoever they were.
So you disagree with the premise that Heinzen testified that she received the drugs directly from Ibarra?
I That's what she said, but she did not say that Ibarra said it was in the same condition.
But your argument is that while Heinzen received some drugs from Ibarra, there's no way to establish that the drugs Heinzen received were in fact the drugs seized from the defendant.
That's my point. And that was a critical point.
That Ibarra's confusion may mean that the drugs that were delivered to Heinzen came from some other case and not this case.
Some other case, and they all talk about how chaotic, and again, I've never seen one, and in any of these cases concerning Vital Link, I've never seen one where the person stops and says, I don't have my notes, but this is really, I've never seen this testimony. And my position is at that point, there was a critical, it was tainted. At that point, the court did not have the reliability and that it should have never come in. The jury, we get juries, people who don't know the law and don't know the facts of the case and don't know the people. They're given instructions, but I think Mr. Singleton, the trial lawyer, even mentioned it was not a specific instruction for chain of custody.
Well, this chain of custody is not a jury issue, is it? That's a...
No, sir.
That goes to the admissibility of the analysis.
It should never have gone... So the jury... the jury's given this evidence.
You said at the outset you were requesting it be dismissed and or remanded. If this is a... admission of evidence problem, then the relief you'd be entitled to would be remand for a new trial.
And then they would have the option of checking to see if they can correct this chain.
They could read the notes.
Or bring them to court if they exist.
Apparently that's optional.
You're in your rebuttal time.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I will reserve the rebuttal.
Mr. Temple?
Good morning.
Tell me how we know that the drugs that came into Ibarra's possession were in fact the same drugs that ended up in Heinzen's possession.
From Heinzen's testimony and Coy's testimony. Coy said
now, Heinzen said he got drugs from Ibarra, but Ibarra seems to think that he may have mixed two cases up.
Well, that's why I disagree. First of all, with the appellant, and she keeps on saying that that's what that was his testimony. I think his testimony is that it appears, my reading from 268 of the appendix, is that he brought the wrong notes to court. That's my reading.
He being Ibarra.
Ibarra.
Okay.
That he's looking at the notes and it looks like, I've mixed up my notes. And his recollection was that he suggests
there's a reasonable possibility that he had multiple items of evidence in his trunk, and the ones that he turned over to Heinzen were not, in fact, the actual drugs seized from the defendant's jacket.
Well, there wasn't testimony that he had multiple items of evidence from previous cases of that day. The testimony was that they had seized the drugs that night, and in the morning they went to the station, and the drugs were handed off to Heinzen. Heinzen says she got the drugs from Ibarra.
There's no evidence, is there, that the container, envelope, whatever it was, into which the seized drugs were placed was ever marked, identified, or sealed?
We don't have that sealed.
And in fact, we don't really know who sealed. The lab report says that they received sealed packaging, but there's no indication in the record at what point those drugs were sealed in a way that they could no longer be tampered with.
I mean, Heisen testified that she received two baggies from Ibarra, and inside one of those baggies were two additional baggies. So it was testimony that she received two.
But there was no testimony as to who put the baggies of drugs into an envelope, sealed that envelope, marked it, and sent it to the lab.
And I think that would be Heisen that did that, but
that's what I would think. That's later on down the chain.
Is that what you're asking?
I can't read the submission form. It's illegible, pretty much. So it's hard to tell.
That's later on down the chain. I don't think that was really an issue in the case.
Some argument made because of the number of baggies. We went from two to four. I mean, I understand the explanation, but I was just trying to figure out at what point can we conclusively say
that they resealed them and sent them off?
The drugs were the same drugs.
I mean, I guess we have that presumption that Your Honor talked about. But
even if we take that presumption of regularity, it's not an irrebuttable presumption of regularity, and if we take a look at the situation, and I think you will agree that it's not the most pristine way of handling a police investigation, but it seems that if we're looking at the reliability of the whole exchange of the drugs to get to the point where they're admissible, at a minimum, Ibarra has some level of confusion as to who he turned the drugs over. Coy says, Ibarra didn't give them to me. I do know that. Heinzen says, Ibarra did give me some drugs, but I'm not able to testify with any reasonable certainty that necessarily the drugs that Ibarra gave to me in this context were the drugs related to this case. If we take those facts, how can we come to the conclusion that the chain of custody was can be reliable?
Well, the burden is not absolute that all possibility of tampering must be eliminated. That's one language from our case law. We just have to show reasonable assurance. That's the language that the case law uses, that the exhibits are the same.
But how do we know that the drugs that Heinzen received, assuming that he got them from Rivera, were the same drugs that Rivera seized from the defendant?
I mean, it's a matter for the jury to decide that these were, he testified that he had two baggies of white substances. Heinzen says she received from Rivera two baggies of substances, white substances, tan, the heroin being a tan, off-white color.
We have said in Hargrove, when a vital link in the possession and treatment of the evidence is left to conjecture, the chain of custody is incomplete and the evidence is inadmissible.
This doesn't rise to the level of conjecture.
Well, aren't we speculating on whether or not the drugs that, assuming that Rivera did in fact give them to Heinzen, aren't we speculating that the substances he gave to Heinzen are in fact the same substances he seized from the defendant?
I don't think it's speculation to say that when you got two bags of drugs, that they're not the same. In every case, we can say.
I mean, was there even any testimony?
How do we know that the officer didn't plant those drugs? How do we know that it's from a different case? In every case, we would have to say.
Yeah, actually, you know, because you asked the officer, is this the same item that you seized from the defendant that you turned over? Did you tamper with them while they were in your possession? I mean, those questions were not asked, and when they were not asked, we're left to conjecture. I mean, it's not unusual for a police officer to make two drug arrests in one night and have two separate samples of evidence.
Well, I would submit that gaps in the chain of custody, and this is what we're talking about, the gap in the chain of custody normally goes to the weight of the evidence for the jury to decide not to miss it.
Well, that's not what Hargrove says. Hargrove says the evidence is inadmissible. So the error here is in the admissibility of the evidence, not in the sufficiency.
And normally gaps go to the weight, not the admissibility. And that is from the Aguilar case from the Supreme Court of Virginia in 2010, we're quoting Melendez-Diaz in that case.
So your position would essentially be, and if I misstated, please correct me, is that the determination of whether or not the standard of reliability has been met is essentially a factual call. The trial judge had the ability to listen to the testimony, assess the demeanor of Ibarra, Heinzen, and Coy, and based upon all the circumstances presented, even recognizing the lack of pristine nature that the drugs were handled, that from a factual standpoint, the judge found that the evidence was, the chain of custody was accomplished reliable enough to allow it to be considered by the fact finder to assess guilt or innocence.
That's absolutely my argument. Well stated.
see if we can give a second vote.
Judge Huff? but no, I do think, I mean, this is the case of the forgetful officer, and I think this is just a matter for the fact finder to determine, and they certainly consider all this during the argument that was presented to counsel on the merits. And once the certificate was admissible, it was a matter for the jury's responsibility to wait. This hypothesis of innocence was considered by the fact finder and was rejected by the fact finder.
Well, is it your argument that chain of custody has nothing to do with admissibility?
No, I think the opposite.
You have to establish that the drugs analyzed were in fact the same drugs seized in order for the certificate to be admissible, correct?
Right. It doesn't have. I guess my argument is it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to.
I understand that. And if it's not perfect, but it's sufficient.
It's sufficient.
Then it goes to weight.
It goes to weight, and that's my argument. This is not a perfect case, obviously, but I don't think it rises to a level.
It reminds me of the great quote by Casey Stengel when he managed the New York Mets. Can anybody here play this game?
Catch up now.
I've gotten in trouble for an officer not testifying today, and an officer did testify today. So, I can't win. Yeah. Maybe that's my baseball analogy. I'm at least striking out with Judge Petty. Luckily, I don't have a third case, so maybe I... I think we've covered the chain of custody, the invisibility issue, sufficiency issue. But despite the assignment of error, is actually a kind of narrow assignment of error despite how long it is. It deals with just the chain of custody issue, and I think I've covered that.
I'm assuming you agree that were we to agree with the appellate, we would reverse remand for new trial, not reverse dismiss.
Right. And as for the third issue, inconsistent verdict, I think the law is quite settled on that point.
There's a distinction in the evidence. One of the DNA found on the item for which he was convicted, and no DNA found on the other drug for which he was acquitted.
Well, yeah, there was DNA found on one of the heroin bags, yes. So there's another reason why that we can say that this probably was the same drug that came from the same defendant. It was a matter for the weight for the jury to decide.
Is that that was one of the heroin bags that was actually in a single baggie? Am I correct on that? That the two baggies of heroin were then in another bag. That was the 2-4 distinction.
I believe so, and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't remember exactly.
Yes, sir. Ms. Ellis? What about the DNA in this case? Does the DNA establish that the drugs that were analyzed were in fact seized from the defendant?
The only DNA was on one, and it was very low level. I think
it was on the heroin, but not on the cocaine.
That's correct. And well, it was
but,
so low.
But all of these drugs were found together, weren't they?
And that's my understanding. But there was, I think, one or two alleles, but the DNA person and the statistician testified that it could be a lot of people. They could not exclude it because one or two of his alleles was there, but they could not exclude
but other people. But if we factor that into chain of custody, it doesn't have to show beyond a reasonable doubt that it's his DNA. All it has to show is a reasonable possibility, the probability that's his DNA.
But that was later on, after the judge had already made the determination.
But we're reviewing everything. We're not just reviewing a portion of the trial. I mean, why isn't that enough? I mean,
because it was a very low level, and if I'd been trying this, I would have been arguing that wasn't sufficient to even send it to the jury. It was an allele that matched his. Many of us have alleles that match other people. And I don't have the actual page number here, but in my brief, I've pointed out that the DNA person stated that it could be a lot of people. So that's just an additional thing that was added on. My position is that the chain was so tainted that it infected the whole case. And I think, I would submit that may be one of the reasons that they threw out the cocaine. And but when the judge sent this to them, he was in essence vouching that it was reliable to go to them. Now, there were so many inconsistencies. Reinzen, there was someone else that said that they took the property that was found at the hospital. Reinzen says she got it from the Sally Port. That officer says that he laid it on the table. He wasn't saying whether there was any other evidence on the table. Reinzen also says she got the call at 3 a.m. That was just minutes. The timing is so off. Reinzen never went to the scene. Reinzen was sort of a sit back, do nothing investigator in this particular instance. And what we're relying on is what Reinzen did. And I don't mean to criticize, you know, I know they have a hard job, but in this instance, the Commonwealth had the burden of proving each and every element. And I go back to what Ibarra said, and the case is Hargrove, if it's left to conjecture, the evidence is inadmissible. And the Attorney General was arguing normally you let it in. Well, this is not the normal case. This is the case where the police could have done it the correct way, and they didn't. There are a number of other things. As far as what we've raised, I've put in the brief where the objection to the chain, the motion to strike, the renewed motion to strike, Mr. Singleton's motion to set aside, and then the defendant in this case did a very in-depth motion to set aside that the court ruled on. And I would submit that all of our arguments in the brief are supported, they're not procedurally defaulted, that they were saved. But I think it all goes back to my position is when Ibarra made the comment that he could have confused it with another case, and there's no evidence in here, and the Commonwealth had the obligation to prove that it was the evidence taken that was turned over, and it was in the same condition, no chance of tampering. I'm not saying tampering in this case. I'm saying that he mixed it up with somebody else's evidence. And the fact that everyone talks about how chaotic it was out there, there were a lot of officers, and looking back, it all started for a routine traffic stop and I think I'm out of time.
Thank you very much. We'll come down to the council, and then we'll take up the Williams case.
All rise.